Today is Wednesday, July 6th, the year 2005. We're in East Lansing, Michigan on campus at Michigan State University. I'm Professor Jeff Charnley interviewing Dr. Dorothy Harper-Jones for the MSU Oral History Project for the sesquicentennial of Michigan State, which is being commemorated in this year, 2005. As you can see, Dr. Jones, we have a tape recorder here. Do you give us permission to record this interview?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I'd like to start with just some general questions about where you were born and raised. Where were you born and raised before you went to college?
Okay, I was born in Shiloh, S-H-I-L-O-H, Alabama. And that was a rural section where my grandparents had a huge farm. So I knew something about farming. But I actually grew up in Birmingham, Alabama, and went to elementary school there and to high school. Okay. It was Council School and then Parker High School. Okay. And they did not actually have a high school in my area, so I had to take the streetcar to another part of town because that was where the best school was. But also you have to think of the fact that there was segregation. And so it was, even though there were schools in the area where I had gone to elementary school, they were not for persons of color.
Mm-hmm.
So I then had to take the streetcar every day.
Okay.
But you end up getting to know a lot of people when you have to ride the streetcar every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you were 14, 15, right around
there? Yes.
You started high school?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
What type of farm did your grandparents have?
Oh, they had a working farm.
Okay.
In the sense of they may sell some of the crops, but like cotton and corn and beans and those kinds of things. So we never went to a store
mm-hmm.
for anything other than to buy meal or flour
mm-hmm.
because we had chickens and all kinds of pigs and cows and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, I actually loved going back there after I moved to Birmingham
mm-hmm.
because I had a couple of chickens who were my favorite chickens and they would not kill them.
Uh-huh.
They knew
uh-huh.
they could not hurt my chickens. Yeah. So it was a farming. But then in Birmingham, I lived in a section called Ensley, E-N-S-L-E-Y, Ensley. And it was segregated. And I do recall very much that we had the streetcars in the beginning, and the streetcar stopped about 4 or 5 blocks from where I lived. So I would walk those 5 blocks, but at the end of that 5th block, that was when the pavement stopped.
Yeah.
So then it went into the, quote, colored area. And so then it was not paved at all.
Mm-hmm.
But what was most important to me in remembering is that it was the cleanest dirt you've ever seen. We would sweep
mm-hmm.
the dirt so it was very clear. We would have, everybody on the street had flowers. And so our street, even though no pavement, looked much more hospitable, looked much better cared for, and there was pride.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that may end up being a theme in what I talk about,
mm-hmm.
in that even with segregation, therefore, there were things that we did to say we are important, we value ourselves, and we value where we are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This was the early 1950s?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Were there some of the community leaders that you knew as a child in that area?
Interesting. Most of the community leaders in that time period were ministers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew that the minister, I was a member of a Baptist church, I knew that he worked with the ministers from other, and so you had the Ministerial Alliance, mm-hmm. and those were people that you looked up to. But you also, for me, even more importantly, you looked up to your teachers, because they were the ones who kept saying to you, you are important, you can learn. And I learned so much from these dedicated teachers, mm-hmm. and they were all African Americans, mm-hmm. male and female.
Was there any teacher that had you could just look back and think had a very important influence on you directly, or any by name? You remember any?
Oh goodness, now I have to think.
I don't mean that.
No, right. But still, if I can remember, Dr. Norman.
Okay.
He was my algebra teacher. He made it fun to learn math and then geometry. And it was like, I was going to be a math major in college because of that experience that I had with him. Because mm-hmm. we went to 1 through 8th grade, and then you went, and then the 9th through 12th for high school, but he was so instrumental. I had another one who was a social studies person, and that name is not coming back as quickly, but that person helped me to have a sense of value, that even though you are experiencing segregation, that this is not how you are defined. And at never once let down in terms of expectations, not just of me, but I mean, you're talking about my connection. And it was like, if somebody in the classes, we did not do our work, that wasn't me. No, I knew better than not to do my work. But we knew that they would be in touch with our families. Mm-hmm. There was a sense of community, a sense of saying that we are going to do our best to make sure, I don't care if you're in a segregated school, that you are going to learn and you're going to be able to stand on your own 2 feet no matter where you go. Mm-hmm. So that was instilled from an early time. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was there any point where you personally made the decision to continue on with your education, or
I did not. I never had a choice.
Yeah.
I guess if I'd been vociferous about it or something, but it was clear that I was going to go on to high school. I was then going to go to college, and I was going to then apply for scholarships and all of that. And then my family and my teachers were going to look at what was the best school for me to attend. Mm-hmm. And it was never any, it was not expected that I would bring anything less than a B home.
Exactly.
And a B would be, okay, what happened? but because I loved learning. Mm-hmm. And I loved being in school. The teachers recognized that I had some talents in the area of performing and dance. So, I mean, school was, and I was a teacher's pet.
Oh, really?
So I had sometimes with the students, some of the students didn't like me. Oh, you're her favorite or something mm-hmm. like that. But I'd say, well, if you do better at your studies, maybe you'd get to be a favorite too. So I would utilize even something that was seen as derisive as an opportunity. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The opportunity for cultural things like dance and theater, you were involved in those?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And we had, we would put on plays. We would put on plays that were written by Langston Hughes. Oh, and all of us had to learn his speeches. Mm-hmm. And we'd have oratorical contests. You ever heard mm-hmm. of one of those?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah. Haven't participated.
I was just going to say, I bet you participated.
No.
Yeah. And so that there were many ways that, as I said, we would have the plays, we would have concerts. I didn't sing in the choir because I could mm-hmm. not do everything. Mm-hmm. And so I chose the drama and the other things, but we had beautiful choirs. And then when I went to college, the choirs were beautiful, and I kept saying to myself, you know, I never heard a bad African-American choir. Mm-hmm. Because they were good voices, but they also, over the years, people who had evolved as directors saw what they could get out of students. Mm-hmm. And see, you don't know, we've got somebody who loves to talk. I remember in college that the director of the choir very seldom did more than just a small move of his hands. And there were times when I said, just watch his hands, because they were never off. Mm-hmm. They had gotten so in tune to the way he directed. And I says, wow, that is truly a remarkable skill.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
When did you graduate from high school?
Got to take it back. Let's see. 57 was when I graduated from Talladega. So you got to go back four then. And then that would be 50. Take four away from that. Mm-hmm. And so that's the way it was. So eighth, then to high school, then to college.
Okay. And so where did you end up doing your undergraduate work?
I did my undergraduate work at Talladega College.
Okay.
It was called the Oasis of the South. And there's a reason for that, is that, and it's Talladega. And the reason for that was that we had students from all over the world during time of segregation, mm-hmm, at Talladega College. I remember students from Germany, there was somebody from Japan, there was someone from Norway. I'd never met any people not coming from Birmingham, Alabama, segregation, but all of these. And it was called the Oasis of the South because as long as we were on the campus of Talladega College, there were no problems. We could not go into town together. So it's like we had a world of people on the campus, but we could not have that world out off
couldn't
the
campus. Couldn't socialize outside.
No. We wouldn't even walk downtown together. Mm-hmm. But we said, okay, that's the way the world is. But see, that was coming up to, it wasn't in place completely then, but it was fermenting, the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. But interesting enough, when the civil rights movement really took off, I had left Alabama. But I do know about some of the places. I remember one time, that was much later, I'm getting ahead of the story, but the point is that that in college, I had this wonderful experience, but after college, it was still segregated.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
What did you end up majoring in?
Sociology.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any professor there in your undergrad that was
Donald Rasmussen.
Okay.
Who is still alive.
Okay.
Lives in California. I'm in touch with him every Christmas.
Yeah.
And several of us who get in, you know, we may not even see each other. We may see each other at conferences, but we always talk about how we taught. We wrote to Dr. Rasmussen, and then a couple said, "Well, I actually got him on the phone. I've tried calling and couldn't get him." But as of last year, he was still alive, uh-huh, and he was still just, you know, I know he's aged, but he just sounded, even in his letters, still that supportive professor, mm-hmm, that said, these young people of color can do it. And first time I ever had any, his wife would invite all of the sociology majors to their house. Mm-hmm. I'd never had borscht. He served borscht. I don't know if I really like it, but you know, you're a good guess. But they saw that was given several messages to us about ourselves, about their connection to us, and for us to experience and think, because we found out that borscht was primarily from Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Russia? Oh, my. Yes. Uh-huh.
Interesting. Yeah. And he took a personal interest in your work?
Oh, yes. He was one that he would give us the exam and leave. There was no proctor. Mm-hmm. There was no one watching us. And there was one time we were all struggling with a question. And so we start discussing it while we were supposed to be doing our exams. Uh-huh. And so afterwards he said, well, I see that all of you got together and decided how you were going to answer that question. I said, that was good, but I still would have liked to have thought, you know, what were your own thoughts about this? And we just said, oh, my God. You know, it had been something, if he had, we were chastised, but in a way that it made us feel we had misplaced, we had not kept to the trust he had in us. Mm-hmm. So that was bad as getting a bad grade when you say, oh my gosh, he's not upset. That wasn't it. He was just disappointed in us. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, ended up being an experience for me because, as I say, here he saw his role was to helping these black, and we were called colored then, colored people in school, and that I have something to offer them. But then there was Dr. Hobson. Dr. Hobson was the one who said, you are going to learn about opera. We had Leontine Price, we had all of these big singers, we had orchestras come. We had to dress. I had to send home from my mother and tell her I needed a long gown. When we went to hear these concerts, we had to dress appropriately. Mm-hmm. And when you went to the opera, something, that's what you did. He modeled it after New York. Mm-hmm. And after each one of these, we had to write. You didn't just say, I enjoy that. You had to do a critique. And in terms of how well, if it was a singer, if it was someone who was playing instrument or whatever. So he was acclimating us to being able to not just listen, but how do you take something in and make it a part of you and then evaluate it. And with the idea that that's not just what you do there, that's what you're going to do with other experiences. Mm-hmm. But we used to get all dressed up and it was just really a very white tie kind of thing for us. Mm-hmm. And for many who had come from all kinds of backgrounds, that this was, and we when we get together now, we talk about the fact that what he did was, and this was among us, he civilized us to what culture was like. Mm-hmm. And we had to keep a diary. We had to keep a diary on what we were learning in his class. Mm-hmm. And the impact it was having on us. Mm-hmm. So it's just that there were so many pieces to that, and there were others, but he and my major prof in sociology were the two. And we had to do things like, that was back in elementary school. We had cooking classes and all those kinds of things, but we didn't have that in college. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When did you move north?
After I finished at Talladega, and I was an honor student there, my major prof, Donald Rasmussen, the one that I say now lives in California, he said, you want to go be in social work? And I said, yeah. Mm-hmm. He said, well, there's only one place you should go. And I said, oh. And he said, to Smith College in Massachusetts. And there was one other young woman there who wanted social work. She lived in Buffalo, New York. So he said that the two of us should go to Smith. And we applied and were accepted at Smith. Later on, we found out that didn't happen very often.
We had not thought in terms of ourselves as being special.
Uh-huh.
Dr. Rasmussen said, this is where you should go. You apply and you will get in. Mm-hmm. And so it was just phenomenal in terms of what happens when you have people supporting you. You are not subsumed by your culture. Mm-hmm. You are impacted by the people around you who says you have something to, you have to learn because you will have to make a difference in society.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was that a culture shock when you got to Smith?
Yes, but not in terms of, because it was integrated, but but I think he had helped prepare me in the sense of, you know, you're going to be around a whole lot of people that you have not been involved with in school before. He said, but what you do is just think of them as your classmates.
Mm-hmm.
And so some from that first year of graduate school are still some of my best friends.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So he was so instrumental in helping us value ourselves in that we didn't have to let down for anybody. That if you come, the expression I like using now, if you come to the table, that people will have to respect you. So, and I don't recall any specific experiences while I was at Smith. And then you have to do, we had to do 2 years of placement. My first year placement was in Boston. And I lived in a settlement house.
Mm-hmm.
Lived in a settlement house because that made it easier in terms of managing. And that was a mind-boggling experience for me. Because in this settlement house, Norfolk House in Boston, had people living there from all over the world. There was someone from Germany, there was someone from Japan, there was someone from Switzerland. There were just people from all over. And my gosh, here coming from Talladega, I just had never, I'm sure we'd had exchange students occasionally, but interacting with these people on a daily basis, and we had to take turns cooking, and I learned to eat Egyptian food and Japanese food, and it's like, wow. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's just, talks in terms of, it speaks to that some things have been serendipitously happened that way, but there have been others where it just evolved out of places, and I've been very thankful for the kinds of opportunities. I worked at a family service agency as a student, had a wonderful, wonderful supervisor who was just very supportive of my development as a social worker. And then my second year, because you had to do a 2-year internship, mm-hmm. I did it in Rochester, New York at Strong Memorial Hospital, which is one of the best hospitals in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the psych department. Oh, and I got to, there was this one psychiatrist that, he was so good looking, I fell in love with him. He never knew it, though, but you know, you get a crush. But he was so good because we would be in meetings and he would interview a patient who was in the hospital because of mental concerns.
Mm-hmm.
And he would sit there, and this one man came in and told him about his business and showed him his card and everything, and we left. He said, not one word he said was true.
Mm.
It was his fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yes, yeah. And so there were many things like this that, and it was top notch, and I had wonderful supervisors, and I would have stayed at Rochester Strong Memorial Hospital, but in the meantime, I had gotten to know one of my schoolmates from Talladega. And it seems if we were going to move forward in getting married.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So my husband is actually from Talladega College also.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And you were there at the same time?
He was a year ahead of me.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but he...
What was his area that he studied?
He ended up in social work, too.
Okay.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. But he went into... he liked administration. Mm-hmm. And so that was his area, and he... we never were in the same agency, mm-hmm. but I like direct practice with the clients who needed help.
I see. Mm-hmm. I forgot to ask his name.
His name is James Theodore Jones.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. We have two children, Laurel, who is 41, and she is head children's librarian at the library, main library in Durham, North Carolina. Our son is Marcus Kendrick Jones, and he lives in Brazil and has lived there for 8 years, and he now is in business for himself that deals with negotiation and implementing new programs in businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Long ways away from Talladega.
Oh, yes, yes, yeah, yeah, yeah.
After your clinical work, how was it that you came to Michigan?
Came to Michigan, because as I said, we're living in Cleveland. Then my husband got a job here, and so that's when we came here to live.
In Lansing?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Well, no, we actually, no. We first lived in Detroit.
In Detroit, okay.
Yeah. And he was working at, more like a halfway house for persons who were having mental problems. But he was more an administrator rather than direct service. And We moved to Lansing after the riots,
okay.
because we said
67.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. We did not feel that was a good place to live, and we still remember that. Woke up on a Sunday morning, and I usually would go to church, but for some reason I decided I wasn't going to church that day. And later, put that back on this. But then I went to, I said, well, there was a Federal's department store in that area. So I said, well, I'll go here and I'll get a few things and then I'll be back. Well, I got there and all over the television and the radio was about the riot. I didn't even know it. Mm. And I went back and I said, Dad, turn on the TV, turn on the TV. They're rioting in town in Detroit. Mm-hmm. And it was like, and then his brother lived there. So his brother, and it was going on, that was the first day, but it kept going that next night. He would go wherever there was burning, mm. and he'd call us and tell us about it. He didn't participate,
mm-hmm.
but he was an observer. And then he found out about something else, he'd go and then he'd call. And we said, Charles, go home. No. He says, you know, I'm not helping in any way, but this is a part of it. And he said, called one time and said, guess what? I said, oh, Charles, what is it now? I'm watching them loot Saks Fifth Avenue. Because there was a Saks mm-hmm. in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And he's watching them. He said, I can't do anything, so I'm just watching them. Boy, there's somebody come out with this beautiful fur coat, you know, this kind of thing.
Oh, no.
Charles, go home. But no, it was, you know, he was young and being a part of it.
Mm.
So we were in Detroit during those riots, and we stayed away from the area where there was the worst part of fires and things. And I didn't cry, but I almost cried the next time I went through,
mm-hmm.
because I said that what has happened is that the people here, not because of something that was their making, have destroyed their own property.
Mm-hmm.
They had no place to live. Mm. And I said, something is wrong with our society when this is what happens. And I cried because it was so hurtful, and the looting and everything, and it was just showing you how when you have pent up feelings of not being valued and being kept down, that when it flares, it just flares with a vengeance. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't me. I've been a pacifist mm-hmm. ever since I was at Talladega, because mm-hmm. my professor, major professor, said the pacifist way is the best way to be in terms of yourself and what you can do for the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Mm-hmm. What was your experiences when you first got to Lansing? Now, had you had any of your children then?
We had both children.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. When we moved to Lansing, we moved because my husband had now gotten a job at the state level.
Okay.
So therefore, because we were sort of, it's one of those things where it wasn't, even though we both had degrees and all, and I always worked. Not full time, but when the children, but you know, his job, in the traditional way that mm-hmm. his job, we would go there. So we were moving to Lansing, and this is really something. We were looking for a house, and we looked at a house on Harrison Road. Now that was many, many years ago, and we asked how much were they asking for the house, and it was $21,000. That was a lot of money back mm-hmm. then. And then we had some friends of ours who were white go and look at the house and ask. They were asking $10,000 for it.
Amazing.